The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this Sunday's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and I have my associate, Mr. Dan DuBose, on the line, I believe, already. Are you there, Dan?
I'm here. Good morning, Nathan.
Okay, great to hear your voice again, and for those of you that may not have realized it, we did do a show yesterday, Saturday, that will be just a one-time, lest any of you think we're going back to two shows a week. Well, we are. We're actually going to more than two, but they're not going to be on Houston stations. We've got a half dozen or so other stations that we'll be rolling out here in the next, hopefully by March 1. We're still working out some of the details, and they will be replays of the Houston show, so this will continue to be our initial weekly show. But in any event, I'll go ahead and finish off our disclaimers. We always do to just remind you that regardless of what you hear today, whether you think it's good, bad, or indifferent, don't go try it if it's a tax strategy or financial strategy without first consulting with your existing advisors to find out whether or not you heard it right, whether or not it's true, and whether or not it applies to someone with your facts and circumstances. And if you don't have financial advisors that understand how to analyze this type of content and strategies, etc., feel free to go to our website at beaplanner.com. That's BEAPLANNER. And probably the two most common links there are found at the top right. There's one for forms and one for calls, and you're more than welcome to go to the forms link and complete our intake form so that we'll have your facts and circumstances, and then if you want to schedule a call to chat with Dan and I, we'll be more than willing to tell you how we think we might sync up with your goals and objectives. So again, beaplanner.com, BEAPLANNER. So Dan, let's talk a little bit. We got a lot to get over today, or get to discuss today. We're going to do a couple more syndications, different than the two yesterday. And then we're going to talk a little bit about a big tax change that's going to affect the private partnership multifamily space here this year. And we've got some math, some tentative math that we'll be refining as we go forward here. But we threw this together in literally the last 5 minutes as we were waiting to come on the air. So don't write these numbers down yet, but it kind of makes sense just at the high level because of the change in the rule that it would change by a similar amount on the bottom line. But anyway, we'll get to that momentarily. So there's a news article, or an article, shouldn't say it's news. This isn't news to us, is it, Dan? And I guess I should tell you the title is Breaking Down Six Common Retirement Myths. It's a Kiplinger article. That was, when did this thing come out? I can hardly see that size type. Oh, it doesn't have a date where I was looking, so I don't know. We'll find it shortly. It's new. This just came in via an email that I got about 15 minutes before the the show started. But myth number one, I don't need to revisit my withdrawal rate. Boy, is that a big one. We'll come back to each of these. Myth number two, Medicare will cover all health care costs. That's almost as naive as the first one. And the third one, they're kind of poking fun at people, but I'm not sure they should. Myth number three is Social Security won't last. Well, they may. I think they're going to argue that it will, but I'm here to tell you, if Congress doesn't do something to fix our deficit, it won't. And that's a true statement. That's no myth. And we talk about this almost week in, week out. Myth number four, I can work for as long as I need to. Well, I can't say that I'm not guilty of thinking that. I do. I do plan on working as long as I need to or want to. I kind of enjoy it. But in any event, we'll revisit that one as well. Myth number five, I'll spend less and pay less taxes. Well, that's not news to us because we do tax returns for people that are well into retirement and are shocked that oftentimes their taxable income's higher now than it was when they were working. And this is all before the tax brackets go up, which, as you know, we are pretty sure they're going to. It's just simple math. They have to. Or myth number three is going to be correct. Social Security won't last. Right, Dan?
That's right. We already have unfunded liabilities of, $185 trillion now, and part of the biggest chunk of that is Medicare and Social Security, which is two of the things they talk about in this article.
Well, yeah, and of the two of them, it's Medicare that's the biggest.
Than the Social Security, even. That's right.
Yeah, how much was Medicare? Was 53 trillion or 70? I think it was 53, and then Social Security was about 24 trillion. I said million. I'm sorry.
Trillion.
And that's unfunded. Okay. So anyway, so myth six is I'll live in the same place throughout my retirement. And all I can say is I hope not. I don't like stairs anymore. And I would like for it not to be the same place. My wife's not quite there yet. At 20 years my junior, she doesn't understand what the fuss is. But I'm telling you, I don't like stairs or steps. So looking at each one of these just briefly, the first one was I don't need to revisit my withdrawal rate. And really what they're talking about here, they don't mention it specifically, which I'm really not sure why. They don't call it by the buzzwords anyway. We've got the concept of longevity, with today's medical technology, all of our life expectancies, I guess that's the other buzzword in this topic, life expectancy and longevity. And there's a difference. Dan, you want to take a crack at what the difference is? What's life expectancy? Let's just talk about that.
Male is about 85, 86, and female is about 86, 87. They're about a year's difference.
Right, but you're talking about the charts, which is effectively what I'm suggesting. It's just that's an actuarial concept, right? That's what the IRS uses. Insurance companies use that. That's based on the population as a whole. But it doesn't really drill down, and I'm going to use you as an example, Dan, and we shared your age other times, so it's not like this will be the first time. I'm willing to bet that you will live well past the life expectancy of a normal male. Why? Because you've got good genes. You should drop down on your knees every night and thank the good Lord for those parents, or at least I guess your mom, that lived till she was 97. Right? That's longevity risk. Now, if we knew going in, like right now, that we were going to live to 95 or 97, don't you think our retirement savings plans would be affected by that as opposed to 85 or 86? That's a long time, a lot of extra years where we will outlive our money as opposed to our money outliving us if we don't plan accordingly. And so when they're talking about revisiting your withdrawal rate, you know, the classic 3 or 4% that most financial planners suggest to you is standard. It's been a popular concept for years. That may or may not work if you're like Dan, where you've got good genes in your background, right? So there's a difference between life expectancy and your longevity risk. And so we like focusing on longevity. And, you know, Dan and I are not, we don't just focus on, these actually are tax strategies. We're looking at the overall toolkit that we have to work with. And you might be shocked to learn about some of the tax shelters under the code. And you're thinking, well, yeah, Nathan, that's what y'all work with, or real estate partnerships. Well, how about Index Universal Life or some of the other life insurance products? Correct, Dan? That are some of the best tax shelters we've ever had. And the code is full of insurance-related tax shelter strategies. And those are tools that you can use to rebut or abate longevity risk. You got some thoughts on that, Dan?
Yeah, you know, you were talking about the life insurance, or right now the tables they're using use, instead of a 100 endowment years, they use 120 or 121, I can't remember which, 120 years. So, you know, life, people are living longer, and it's expected by the insurance companies, you know, who are, you know, the major actuarial users as far as the finance world is concerned. Yeah. They've been using the 120 table for the last 10 years or so. So it's been expected that people are living longer, and we are.
But how many 118-year-olds do we know, right? So what you're saying is that insurance actuaries measure and deal with risk. They assess risk better than anybody else in the world as a group. Okay, when's the last time you saw a major insurance company go under? You know, it hadn't happened. Came close during the debt malaise, but bottom line is that they measure risk. And for all of our real estate clients that, you know, effectively kind of downplay or think, well, you know, insurance doesn't make near the money that my real estate, well, maybe not. And what I would suggest is you want to look at having some of both, because there's no question the cash flow generating engine that real estate represents is significantly better typically. But, you know, insurance has a little thing like, I guess you'd call it an annuity, where it just keeps on crunching the checks out month after month after month after year, et cetera. And again, when's the last time you saw an insurance company go under? Now, I understand nobody likes paying for that annuity, but for some reason, we all accept it with Social Security, right? And do you think the Social Security system, Dan, is anywhere near as solid in terms of the underpinnings as a Class A or A-grade insurance annuity policy?
Yeah, I think the U.S. government could use a little bit of help from insurance companies that they so strongly regulate to cause them to be so liquid. You know, the insurance companies have to have reserves. You know, the government can just go print some more reserves, so to speak. And that's what's created this $31 trillion deficit that we're, or debt that we have now, not to mention the $181 trillion unfunded debt. So,
well, you know, and that's on top of all, I mean, go to truthinaccounting.org if you want to see the sad shape that most of our municipal pension plans are in. Almost every big city is in deep trouble, including Houston's. And, you know, those unfunded liabilities, I don't think they're on the U.S. debt clock. Are they, Dan? I'm pretty sure that's just the federal pieces.
That's just the federal, yes. That's just
yeah.
the federal.
And
the
so
states have
when,
their own.
When you add it all up, again, real estate is a marvelous investment space. We don't know of anything better to get you above average returns for the long haul. But at some point, it'd be nice to have a shadow retirement plan lurking in the background. And, you know, the tax treatment on something like an index universal life policy is just amazing. And it's not just the tax treatment. It's the fact that you can borrow against it. You can put a without paying tax. You can put a long-term health care rider or chronic illness rider where you can actually tap the death benefit before you pass away if you are in the position where you've got to go into assisted living. It's again, think of it as a tax shelter, and you'll get over your disdain for making a premium payment or payments, as the case may be. Dan, let's move quickly here. We're not going to get to talk about our tax topic here. Number two is Medicare will cover all health care costs. You want to take a crack at that one, Dan?
You know, I am a Medicare supporter, but I also do have a health care override or a supplemental, they call it, to take care of anything that the Medicare doesn't cover. So, and that's an additional cost, of course. So Medicare doesn't cover all the costs. It will cover most nearly everything if you're able to afford a supplemental policy. Now, there's good policies out there. There's good Medicare Advantage things to take advantage of, which I do, and it has saved me a lot of money. I don't think there's any doubt about that in my situation, but everyone's different, of course. I have been fairly healthy, and that's very unfortunate as well.
Yeah, it is interesting, the metamorphosis of Medicare. I mean, it wasn't that long ago when I would see articles about doctors shunning new Medicare patients. Seems like now they want all they can get. And so that ought to tell you something about these coverages. And yet, again, $35 trillion, I just remembered the number, Dan, the unfunded Medicare liability is currently sitting at $35 trillion. And again, that's something you can take a look at if you like to see scary movies. Go to U.S. Debt. debtclock.org. Myth three is Social Security won't last, and I guess what they're suggesting here is that somehow, some way, it will be bailed out. And so, you know, I don't know. It's not going to get bailed out without taxes going up significantly, and there is bipartisan agreement already on the concept of raising the ceiling on Social Security to where there is no ceiling, just like the Medicare piece is now. And part of the problem is we don't have enough youth going into the workforce to pay for all the old folks like Dan and I, right? And I don't claim Social Security yet, but, you know, I'm hopefully going to wait a few more years. But the point is there's a lot more Nathans and Dans out there. They're going to be walking up to the pay window, and there's not enough dollars coming into the pay window. And even the trust fund, as you may want to check out, is almost depleted. What is it, 2033, Dan, or is that Medicare's that runs out in 33? There's one of the
Social
two
Security.
Runs out in 33. Okay,
yeah,
I thought it was Social Security.
Somewhere in the 30s, it's going away or will be depleted. You know, another interesting thing about Social Security that, you know, won't last, they're saying the maximum Social Security you can get is, in round numbers, is $4,500 per person. So that means a married couple can get $9,000 a month. That's $108,000 a year. That's $100,000 a year, let's call it, without even doing anything. It's it's, I mean, I just don't understand how it can start to even pay $4,500, even though that guy that's got that max has been paying in the max Social Security all his working days. And that number this year is $167,400 is your max tax Social Security. As far as your Social Security tax rate is concerned, it's 6.2%. I mean, it's,
yeah,
it's a huge number.
Maybe I need to start claiming mine sooner than what I thought, Dan. You're scaring me. You're scaring me with these numbers. Hey, let me tell you something else that ought to be scary. And, Dan, you correct me if I'm wrong. You remember Senator Daniel Moynihan from New York, right? One of the more common sense liberals back in the day. In fact, if he were in the Senate today, he would be thought of right there with Rand Paul, perhaps, as a conservative. But, you know, he used to rant and rave about how Congress would raid the Social Security Trust Fund, literally borrowed money from Social Security to pay for all this other stuff that we had. And I'm thinking that when we say the trust fund is exhausted by 2033, I'm pretty sure that they're counting those notes from the government as an asset, right? Isn't that the case, Dan?
No doubt.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's worse than what it seems. In other words, we're going to have to deal with it really sooner rather than later. Now, dealing with it will mean printing more money, selling T-bills, I'm assuming. Okay, real quick, myth five, I'll spend less and pay less taxes. I don't even know if we need to discuss this. We beat this a lot as of late. But with the brackets going up, which they're going to go up, you didn't hear it here first, but we're going to keep saying it. It's simply a matter of math. By the year 2029 to 30, the rates will need to go up if we're going to make good on all the interest payments that we owe on the debt. And you think the fight right now is a big deal over the debt ceiling. That one's going to be a really big deal. And let's hope we're not raising the debt ceiling to get around that little problem, because then it's just a race to the bottom, which it may very well be anyway, if we don't deal with it sooner and with significant 150 to 200% increases in the tax brackets. That's basically what CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, has indicated would be necessary. Myth six about living in the same place. I think most of us are aware of some of the spectacular assisted living facilities that have come online. We just talked about another one on the show yesterday. It's going up along Beltway 8, Cyfair area, and you know, it's I don't know. I think it's an amazing resource, amenity set, etc., that we have nowadays compared to the old classic nursing home that, you know, we used to go see my great grandparents and grandparents in. And, you know, but again, it doesn't matter if you can't afford to live there. And those of you that have index universal life policies will actually have a choice between the facilities versus walking into one that's got the strong stench of urine, perhaps, as many of them do, and that's what you get stuck with Medicaid, if you qualify. Okay, so enough on that article. That'll be our news segment for today. So let's take a quick break. We're going to come back and spend about 5 minutes on some tax math and get you tuned in to the new cost segregation and bonus depreciation limits for 2023. We'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner Show.
With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words. Better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
With big dreams and faded jeans.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be a Planner show, the Sunday show. And we were just talking about a Kiplinger article that I thought was noteworthy for addressing some myths about what our life or living standards will be like in retirement. And again, that just came in today in an email I got. So I'm sure if you go Google Kiplinger retirement myths, you can pull that up if you want to read it for yourself. Okay, we're going to talk about taxes here in a bit, and here for a bit. And the reason that I started thinking about this today is, one, we're into the new year, where we're seeing some of the phase outs under the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, otherwise known as the Trump Tax Act, or I guess if you're progressive, you call it the Trump Tax Cuts. We'll take it either way. In any event, I have a client that sent me an email saying that they're in a deal, an apartment transaction that should generate a sizable gain here in 2023. They're going to exit. The partners have decided to pursue a sell, and so we're thinking a $200,000 gain, and I think that was the number. And if it's not, that's still what we're going to use, because that's what we're going to look at a $250,000 gain, because that's what the quick little spreadsheet analysis that I put together is designed to show us. How much of a deal are you going to have to buy to offset that $250,000 gain? And, that's the $50,000 question, as the case may be. Or actually, it's going to be more like a 200. And let's see, where did I end up with on the analysis? I guess it's about a $250,000 purchase. That would get us there. And essentially, what we're looking at is we're backing in to the, what would the gross acquisition need to be? So if we're trying to offset a $250,000 gain, and we've got the chance to invest in multiple projects that might be in the $50 million range, we're assuming a 50% loan to value, so that there's a $25 million loan, a piece of the capital, and then there's a $25 million capital raise. And so if you were to purchase a 1% owner interest that would give you about a $250,000 ownership. And so it kind of syncs up with how much money, theoretically, let's say you've got a gain coming off the property you're selling, and you're going to get a $250,000 gain, plus you're going to get your money back. And by the way, the amount that was invested, I believe, on that transaction was $100,000. So I guess total you'd have $350,000 coming back. But if you run through some just high-level numbers, you buy a 1% interest, so you take $250,000 of your money to do that, and if we were to say, if we were to be as aggressive as 35% of the acquisition being subject to cost segregation and bonus depreciation, that's going to get us essentially about a $200,000, $203,000, I guess is my exact estimate, write-off. And so, you know, you wouldn't be able to get all of your gain eliminated. You would have if we were talking about 2022 when we got a full 100% of the cost segregation slash bonus depreciation. But since that first year phase out of 20% kicks in, we're only getting the $200,000 level instead of the $250,000. And so these are going to be, it's going to be a little bit, it's like, you know, when the market's up, everybody's an expert, right? Well, when the tax rates are at their, in real estate, when the tax rules are at their most opportune levels, like, you know, 100% bonus depreciation on even used real estate, secondhand real estate, everybody's tax planning looks good. You know, you throw a grenade in and end up doing a lot of damage to your tax bill, right? Well, now you've actually got to stop and think about it and try to match the transaction to the gains that you're trying to offset. Right, Dan? Why don't you tell us a little bit about how, let's assume this isn't happening in the first year. So let's talk about somebody that's got maybe 4, 5, 6 multifamily partnership ownership positions and hasn't sold anything. So why don't you run through that scenario, Dan, as to what they might expect on their tax return in the current year with the passive activity loss rules, et cetera.
Passive activity losses are carried forward until you have passive activity income. Passive activity income is generated from positive income from any project that might be in the passive activity. A capital gain will help. A passive gain in a year that you have capital gain on a passive property will take in or allow you to deduct those passive capital or those passive losses from prior years. And any that might be left is carried forward. So you come in with 4, 5, 6 projects where you have the passive losses. Suddenly you have a year where you have one of those properties sell and you have capital gain. You might offset, I mean, we've seen it come back to zero, nearly zero, or maybe even a passive income because of the capital gain from properties that are sold in a year because you had such a large gain. But those other 4 or 5 properties might still be operating, and they're going to have passive losses to carry forward again. So if you want to offset that gain, you got to go get into another project. You referred to it before as a serpentine, you know, where you get out of one, you get in another one right away or as soon as you can. The losses will continue as long as you're in those properties or have a gain to close them out.
Well, and that's the scenario I'm glad you talked about, and I kind of led you into the discussion, assuming there hadn't been any sales. But now let's talk about the situation that we developed this little matrix on the fly with, and the client involved has no passive activity loss carry forwards because they had a deal that sold last year and utilized all of their carry forwards and still owed some taxes, right? So this scenario that we just discussed before you started in on that illustration, Dan, is for the scenario where, you know, we've got nothing to carry forward. So we're looking to take the new investment. We want to pick a deal that has the ability to generate more rather than fewer deductions. And, of course, the bonus depreciation and cost segregation, even at an 80% factor under the phase-out of the bonus depreciation rules, is going to be the type of transaction that will provide the most benefit to somebody that's trying to offset those gains. And so what we're looking for, and when I talk about heavy benefit, I'm telling you, we've seen K-1s where you put $100,000 in and you get a $92,000 or $93,000 write-off. I think I saw one a year ago that had $106,000 in write-off, which doesn't mean you're at risk for it and can actually claim it. But bottom line is, those are heavy, I'm assuming. I'm trying to remember. I think they were a heavy value-add scenarios. They weren't like the transaction. Say again.
I think it had to be to do that.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a transaction like we've talked about the Bayou Park transaction there on Memorial Drive on the show before, which I invested in along with more than a few of my clients. And that property of the $120 million all-in price, $98 million of it was a land value, if I recall correctly. Well, you're not going to get any depreciation on the land component. So if the cost segregation study yielded a similar number as maybe the broker opinion of value, which I assume is where the $98 million guesstimate came from, that would not necessarily be a good transaction if you're trying to offset a big gain from a sale of another property during the year. We want a transaction that's more normal. That, you know, the flip side of that one, that's a scenario there where the land value is 80%, the dwelling structures was 20% of the purchase, whereas we want the land to be no more than 20% and the dwellings to be 80%, because the engineers that do the cost segregation study will be able to pull out all the 7, 10, 15-year property, the wiring, the plumbing, sidewalks, driveways, swimming pools, all the stuff that gets moved out of the 27-and-a-half-year category on the depreciable life system the IRS allows down to the lower year lives. I can't remember, is any of it 5-year, Dan, or does it start with 7-year? 7 years, 7, 10, 15, and I think 20 are the common categories, are they not?
They are. But, you know, it's an amazing thing. I think you listed some things, but even interior non-supporting walls can be considered in the cost segregation for a shorter life. That kind of just makes amazes me, but it is there as long as the engineer says it is. It's a, I mean, if it's a reputable person putting that together, and you must have that. But we wouldn't want to do, I don't think you want to do a deal just to get the cost segregation. You got to look at all the numbers. I mean, cap rate is one of the things you must consider.
Well, I was just going to point out, and you brought up a good one there, but I'm also going to tell you, think of cost segregation and bonus depreciation as a snowball that's going to start building if that property is successful. And you're going to get down the road, and, you know, if we use all or most of the deductions in the current year to offset the gain, now you've got a very low cost basis in that transaction, and maybe all your others if you had to you know, join together.
Low cost basis going forward.
Right. That's right. So now we're going to get down the road, and your gain's going to be even bigger. That's a different problem. Okay, that's another planning problem that we deal with. But in the current year, we're trying to avoid tax. Why? Because a dollar saved today is worth more than a dollar saved or paid in the future. And, you know, if you want to pay me something you owe me, I would rather have it today than 10 years from now, right? So anyway, okay, well, now that we've touched on that, and we'll be developing a matrix that shows you or shows the various points of, you know, how much property is needed to generate the loss needed to offset, you know, $25,000 gain, $50,000, $75,000, $100,000, et cetera. But bottom line is, you know, at an 80% mark, it's about $200 to offset. Well, $200 is what you're going to get, and so you're still going to have some tax, which maybe you'll have losses on other transactions carrying forward, or you may just end up paying a tax bill on a much smaller gain by virtue of getting to use the $200. Okay, well, Dan, we've only got a few minutes left, unfortunately. Which of the two syndications do you think we can get through, or do you think we can hit them both?
We can highlight both here of them, I think.
Okay, well, let's do that. Which one you want to do first? The
Atlanta Houston would be kind of interesting to talk about.
Oh, okay. Atlanta deal. It's a small deal. It's 506B. It's a exclusive to a membership, old school membership platform. So you can't invest in it if you weren't already connected to the syndicator. And actually, this syndicator, I believe, has completed the capital raise, although until they close, no syndicators completed the capital raise is what I would tell you. And I tell all my clients the same. It's like, hey, if you got a reject on your offer to participate, send them an email and tell them you certainly understand and you look forward to the next time they have a transaction. And by the way, I've got my money staged. It can be in your bank account within several hours of you saying you need it anyway, or because somebody else didn't fund or an added cost got thrown onto the closing statement, etc. And so there's always a chance that you might still get into a deal. But again, with 506B transactions and specifically ones that are part of a membership scenario, you've got a couple of hurdles that you probably wouldn't be able to get over in most cases. So go ahead, Dan. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to
this one
take
is
too much
at
of our
a reasonable
time.
Cap rate of using 5.25, which I think is a good one for right now. You know, some people are saying as high as 6%, 5.5%, 6%, but 5.25% looks good, particularly on a small unit deal like this. The looks like it's got a 65% loan, buying it way cheap, I think, at 113 per unit. So it is definitely a value add at these rates. It's got a
how old is the property, Dan?
Pardon me?
How old is this property?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that.
Oh, here. No, I got it. I just saw it. 2001 to 2005, Class B. Just answer that question, which that probably is legitimately a Class B if it's just over 20 years old. So anyway, parking ratio of 2.5 spaces per unit. That fits in that same class. That's a good thing. But anyway, go ahead.
Looks like I calculate a 1.81 EMX, and that's just based on a sale year six out. So it fits in a lot of our categories, I think, doesn't it, Nathan? With what you want to see on a deal, you know, a reasonable cap rate. They do have rents increasing dramatically, I think. At 27% seems to be pretty common in this old school, as you call it.
Yeah, let me think. It's been a few days since I looked at this. Isn't this in a spot of Atlanta that would be kind of like Midtown if it were Houston? I've forgotten. But I think the interest rate, I mean, I'm sorry, the rental rates increases they're projecting are probably doable. And this has some folks involved. The lead himself is not, I don't believe, one of the really experienced leads within this membership platform that we're referring to, but one of the key principals is one of the long time go-to leads that has done very well. So anytime he's associating with a transaction, it's likely that it's got some stable underpinnings. And of course, it's a small property. That's the only thing I would not like, is it has no scale in the sense that, you know, you don't have much room to hide. Any of your flaws will be right there, because you don't have a big cost base to spur, a big asset base to spread cost over, etc. That said, anytime you're buying a quality asset at less than $100 a square foot, which this is, Dan, that's pretty spectacular. I mean, you got a long runway, let's say, to screw it up, as I would see it. So I like the fact that the cost basis right out of the chute is way below what new construction would run, which is something you know a little bit about back in the day, right, Dan?
That was way back in the day. You know, cost of these days just amazes me. And speaking of that, we got another one that is a new project that's, as they say, has been bought out, but it's bought out at $62 million cost. $62 million for 300.
I tell you, Dan, I'm going to have to keep an eye on you. You may start your own show with segues like that. That was beautiful, the way you segue right into the North Houston / Spring project. I like that. So let's talk about that one real quick. 60, what'd you say, 62 million, 65
million? 62 million, right? Dollars, yeah. 360 units. Again, it's using a 5.25 cap rate. You know, they're running out to,
and this is from the
months.
From the dirt up, right? They bought the acreage. 14 acres was purchased at a good basis in 2021, which that probably was a pretty opportune time to be buying, right? And
well, when's the best time to buy real estate? You know, now or a long time ago? How's that thing go?
I'm sorry, say that again.
When should you buy real estate? Yesterday, you know, so anytime you can get into the land deal,
good point. And look at what's around this thing. You got HEBs and Kroger's, Targets, Walmart's within a 2-mile radius at $172,000 per door construction cost. That's that's pretty
that's
savvy operator, is what I I'd love to be a mouse in the room when that negotiation was taking place. They obviously found either a distressed asset or a distressed situation. I'm willing to bet it was the latter. Couldn't have been the asset itself in that locale. Let's see here, Dan. It's in the fourth largest city in America. They're calling, I guess that's part of the Houston submarket. Total population of 7.2 million now. I guess that's why we're getting ready to pass Chicago, or so I heard. I thought it was because of the significant increase in crime, but silly me. You know, I just read the news. That's all I do. And I could have sworn we got to be close, if not surpassed them in crime. But anyway, rapid migration to Houston, according to the Houston-Galveston Area Council. Houston area will experience population growth over 59% in the next two decades. That's probably what they've done in the last two. I can remember when the greater metro was 4.5, and I want to say that was in the last 20 years. Would that be possible, Dan?
Yeah, you know, when they talk about Houston SMSA, I think they're throwing even Woodlands in there these days, and Sugar Land.
Yeah.
You know, so you got two high, very, very high growth areas And I don't know, Katie may be even in there too. So there's no doubt that Houston, you can drive from Houston to Beaumont and not ever, pass an empty lot, just about, it seems these days.
Seems like. You know, we've always known or thought that Houston had one of the lowest cost of living, at least until I start spending a lot of time in San Antonio, and then I think, man, nobody beats San Antonio on low cost. Where else do you see one Papacitos, right? Sure not in Houston. And I'm telling you, that's because the average price of some quality restaurants is probably 10-15% less than Houston. But anyway, they make a bullet point here that Houston has the lowest cost of living amount of the nation's 23 largest metropolitan areas, the absence of state income tax. Well, that's only because we've got a pretty high property tax rate, as I see it. But anyway, lots of good points there that will support this. What's the are they showing an equity multiple and exit cap? I think you mentioned exit cap.
The exit cap at 5.25, but I don't remember an EMX reading that.
Yeah, and this is a 506C, I believe, right?
So
this is one that you would have to be accredited. You wouldn't necessarily have to be connected to the syndicator as of yet. You could walk up late. And these guys are, when you look at their pictures here in the PPM. You see a lot of gray hair. You know, this is experience, I guess. 30 years of commercial real estate finance as a senior VP. Let's see. You got an Aggie running the show. Well, Aggie and a Longhorn. MBAs from Texas. 35 years. A lot of gray hair. So a lot of experience. We like to see. I tell you, when you invest in real estate private partnerships, at the end of the day, you're trusting someone with your money, and there's little, if any, regulation. There's no annual audits that take place. There's nobody going behind these or any other syndicators and saying, yep, they did what they said they would. And that is a huge issue, as I see it, in the industry. And it kind of reminds me of the 1031 exchange industry of yesteryear, like 10 years ago or more, before there was any regulation, which is really kind of scary when you think about the money that was going through there. Well, I'm being told with a little bird whispering in my ear that we're down to less than a minute. And if you do want to consider working with us, go to beaplanner.com. That's BEAPLANNER.com. Fill out our intake forms there at the link on the top right, schedule a call, and Dan and I will be happy to chat with you in the very near term to see if we can sync up with your objectives. Dan, thanks for joining once again, and we will be back next Sunday at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV AM 700.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEV.